football on off the ball.
You called him a disgrace earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'll call him a disgrace again. I'm amazed at this idea that like Messi is somehow like the player who's got a lot to answer for. It's all the others have a lot to answer for.
Join in the obsession.
Hurling on off the ball.
With Apple Green, making every journey a winning one.
This is News Talk.
McIlroy fixes crosshairs fully on DeChambeau, writes Conor McLeone in the Sunday Independent on Royal Birkdale in the Open Championship. It's almost that we're forgetting that Sam Burns is actually leading his tournament.
I mean, the story is DeChambeau, and we've been talking about America and MAGA, and DeChambeau is the personification of that MAGA culture, boorish, entitled, selfish, contemptuous of rules or order, deflecting blame, incapable of taking responsibility for his own actions. And thank God for Rory McIlroy. Have we ever known a global sports star who, every time he speaks, says something that comes straight from the heart, that is unafraid to go straight for the jugular? And I think the defining, myself and Vincent were talking about this outside, the defining quote of this year's Open is when he described DeChambeau as performative. He absolutely nailed it in that moment. He trampled repeatedly on the line behind his ball when he understood where his ball was and that he was a yard or two behind his ball. He then expected, I presume, a peace prize from the RNA, as Infantino would have handed Trump. And the RNA stood up. And I think what was really important was that golf's most high-profile player, Rory McIlroy, then stood up and backed the RNA, because golf can be a little bit self-satisfied with its rules and can be self-important, but ultimately players self-police. And there's a lot about DeChambeau that has taken golf to a new audience, but equally there's a lot about him that is just so entitled and selfish. Who would you rather sit down and have an hour in your company? Would it be Rory McIlroy or would it be Bryson DeChambeau?
There's a famous quote from the coach Pete Cowan. I spend a lot of my time with miserable millionaires, and I think this is where Rory breaks the mold, that so many professional golfers are miserable the way in their deportment. And Rory coming out and speaking with the candor he did last night explains 100% why the US golf media adore this guy, because he doesn't dance on pins. He tells it like it is. Conor McKeown has a very good piece in the Sunday Independent today. I like Conor because he can be quite funny.
And spiky.
And like, you think about Scottie Scheffler, who's become very sullen, you know, as world number one, and he kind of... his life is miserable. You don't understand. You know, I don't get fulfilled by winning majors, type of thing. And he was brought in to the media centre, and the media were told, you get two questions, to which Scheffler interjected, try to make them ones I haven't answered 1,000 times already. You know, that's the start to his two questions.
That's a bit contemptuous of his audience as well.
Yeah. And Connor writes, pro golfers are generally weird creatures. Spending time in proximity to them confirms this. It's not too hard to conclude that most should be doing something else for a living, ideally something they enjoy. So he said only professional restraint, when Scheffler said, you know, make it something interesting, only professional restraint stopped us from chiming in with, how often do you get mistaken for Michael Murphy? Turnips in coddle, yes or no? Or if God is real, how do you explain the success of Mrs. Brown's Boys?
None of us can, to be honest.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it is brilliant.
Like Riyas Al-Samari has written about Bryson braves the rough stuff as McIlroy crows foul. I just quoted here, DeChambeau's a strange beast. The galleries love him. They lifted him. And here he showed tremendous willpower to turn his round. Birdies on the 6th, 15th and 17th holes were remarkable for his circumstances. So too his par saves and bunkers in the 12th, 13th and 14th holes, the last of which required an act of body contortion beyond some gymnasts. I just wonder sometimes, does Bryson DeChambeau know who he is? And you don't seem to have much sympathy for him. Do you have much sympathy for him?
I do, to some extent. I mean, I would have looked at, you know, professional golfers, obviously, particularly when the camera is on them, are held to a higher higher standard of etiquette on a golf course than those of us who hack around. I mean, I wouldn't have seen a whole lot in what he did. And it was interesting talking to a lot of the punters there in Birkdale yesterday. They kind of thought two shots is very harsh.
It's now, a reaction, is it?
Yeah. And one thing I like, we were talking about this outside, there's a showman in DeChambeau, and golf needs showmen. And, you know, I love the thing where there's a drivable par four and he knows the people around the tee box are waiting to see, is he going to pull out the driver? And he has that sense of the dramatic moment. I'll wait a few seconds and then I pull out the driver and there's this big roar. I mean, that's entertainment. And golf needs to be a little bit more entertaining, a little bit less stuffy and a little bit less miserable. But it's clear his fellow professionals could see very clearly that what he did yesterday wasn't acceptable.
John Westerby in the Sunday Times walked the course with him, and it's interesting in that he has drawn in a whole new audience to golf, and they clearly are on his side.
Yes.
And they think the notion of a two-shot penalty for disturbing a little bit of grass to be insane. And equally, there was some sort of scouse wit and humour. While there were the occasional cries of cheat, there was one fan who asked, would you like a loan of my strimmer? stuff like that. But I was out yesterday and I was watching the golf with no sound, and I was most interested in what the reaction would be to him on the first tee, because I thought there would be a chorus of boos, and there wasn't. There was the occasional sort of snide remark, but the crowd were overwhelmingly on his side.
I just wonder as well, has Rory McIlroy kind of had enough of this kind of cultural thing that's seeping into sport and golf, like given what happened to Bethpage, because it was so disgraceful. Maybe there's a bit of residual stuff there with Rory.
I think so, but I think there's a little bit of steel in Rory
there is,
now.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The way he wouldn't talk to DeChambeau in the final round of the Masters last year, pretty much saying, I'm not going to take your crap. And, you know, Rory McIlroy conducts himself with a lot of class, but there's a steel has crept into him. And we saw it in Bethpage, where, again, the behaviour of the Americans. There's a coarsening of America at the moment, and it's led from the White House. And it's really depressing to observe it and to watch it. And it came to we kind of knew it was going to happen in the Ryder Cup, because it was this raucous Long Island welcome awaiting the European team. What does that mean exactly? We all knew what it meant. Now, it didn't help when the lady on the first tee starts shouting, F you, Rory. This is what America has become to a large extent under Trump, that this acceptability of coarse behavior. So I think all of these experiences have put a steel in Rory. There's a resilience in Rory that I personally didn't think was in him. But we've seen it with the two Masters wins, that he can dig in and he can just blot out the background noise. And he played brilliantly in the Ryder Cup, look, despite all the stuff he had to put up with.
I think that first Masters win liberated Rory. It just removed every tension, every stress, every fear that his career will be defined by what he didn't do rather than all he had achieved. And I think he feels now almost a responsibility to be a spokesman for golf.
Yes, Woods is now out of the picture.
Precisely.
And Phil Mickelson certainly is.
that boorish nature of America that, as Hoagie say, seeps from the White House down. I think you'll probably agree with me when you say, if you meet Americans on a one-on-one level, they are incredibly courteous, incredibly decent. I'm talking about tourists in Ireland. Even if you're in New York, the loudest place, I find them to be wonderful people on an individual level. But I think there's a collective, a mentality that might is right, that we are bigger than everyone else and we can bully and achieve all we want, that has been legitimised by the MAGA movement. And you say there'll be a backlash against it, John, in elections. I think there is such a fracture in America between the two sides that you'd fear for the country. It's a place very close to my heart, a place I've been to over 40 times. I used to go and watch Michael Jordan, and when we talk about Lionel Messi, get that same sense through it, that you were watching something, a defining moment in the history of sport. And there was a can-do joy about America that has now been replaced by a "we want Greenland and we're taking it" mentality that sort of has seeped right down by some nasty osmosis into the culture of American sport.
Yeah, it's it was, you know, they were the good guys, and maybe that was a lot of manipulation or marketing, but a lot of people believe that they were good, they were the good guys, and not people not so sure that they're the good guys anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of everything that's happening this weekend, Ireland played the All Blacks, by the way, yesterday morning, our time in Eden Park in Auckland. Two steps to heaven, Rory Keane in the Mail. Just fascinating about this World Cup next year, which has been our big issue for 40 years. But just going through the draw, Rory Keane, is that the top of their World Cup group, they'll potentially avoid all of South Africa, France and New Zealand until the final. Argentina likely to provide the opposition in the last eight if we beat Scotland. And should Ireland win their first ever World Cup quarterfinal, they could look forward to a maiden semi-final against either England or Australia. Obviously, Andy Farrell would have had a window into what he needs to do for the next 15 months yesterday.
Yeah, but I thought yesterday was quite depressing from an Irish rugby point of view. It was the game that mattered on that tour, and Peter O'Reilly talks about a chastening day for Ireland and about how it was a game that showed we are miscast as the third best team in the world. He talked about remarkable sloppiness, a calamitous first half. And watching the game, you were watching two different levels of rugby. I know people are talking about development and the players that were missing, but you felt every time New Zealand got the ball in the first half, you were going to score. You felt Ireland had to really labour and dig down into that well of competitive courage that they doubtlessly have to stay in the game. And there is this post-traumatic stress that comes to the fore every time the World Cup is mentioned and everything leads to the World Cup. If Ireland were playing Argentina in a quarterfinal, you still are going to have all that accumulated baggage, and you still feel, or you fear, that it could go terribly wrong for them again. And I think New Zealand, France and South Africa just look in a completely different league to Ireland to me at the moment.
I do think the calendar is a farce.
Crazy.
This new competition, I mean, a lot of those Irish players, I would suspect, were exhausted going down under, and you're hit with this schedule of a new competition that finishes in November, I think.
Yes, yeah.
I just think the desire to put bums on seats and make money, It's outrageous. And you even had the under 20 World Cup played in Georgia in 40 degree heat. Like, who's making these decisions? There's so little identifiable care for players here. And I would have huge sympathy for the Ireland team yesterday. They got it back to 14-7 in the first half, and immediately a mistake gave New Zealand another try. And there was an invitation for those players to collapse completely yesterday. They didn't accept that invitation. Yes, they lost by 20 points, but it's New Zealand in Eden Park. It could have got very ugly. And I think, to their credit, it didn't get ugly.
The calendar is clearly a problem. And when you see the health issues that have afflicted a lot of not so long retired rugby players, I know there have been changes to the head contact rules to try and counter that. But the issue is that rugby has an existential problem with its finances. It's trying to find a way to stay solvent. And the way it's doing that is pushing players to give more and more and more. You've actually got 13-month seasons now, and something has to give. You can only imagine the physical state of some of those players at the end of all this.
Absolutely.
Well, you just worry. I think the amateur era was Wild West, say, between 95 and the first 10 years. Maybe I think players have got the bill for that, very sadly. I just hope that in 30 years' time, the players that we're watching now don't have a bill that's coming for them in their terms of their health.
Because
it's a game now of collision. I don't know if the human body's meant to be designed for that.
No,
this
not.
Was a game of evasion for the Barbarians, 1973. That's gone into now smashing through people.
Look at two of the great Irish sportsmen of all time, Brian O'Driscoll and Johnny Sexton. And they were so competitively courageous that they could not but push themselves to the limit. They could not but stand in front of a rampaging 6'7" Springbok. And the amount of hits they have taken over the course of the career, precisely because of the type of player they were, the type of guy you'd want on your side, But you just hope that physically going forward, people like that retain the good health they have at the moment.
Gary Sobers, Sir Garfield Sobers, died this week. Probably the greatest all-round cricketer of all time. Ian Herbert's written a piece about it, referencing Duncan Hamilton's book about Gary Sobers. So rest in peace, Gary, 89 years of age. I just love this. But he held the Test cricket record for 36 years, yeah. And then he hit six sixes off and over for Nottinghamshire in 1968. But just the quote, the book details how another of Sobers' legendary achievements, the six sixes over against Glamorgan's Malcolm Nash at Swansea in 1968, came on an afternoon when he'd gone to the bookies. Snots were cruising and he'd no expectation of being required to bat. What ensued, an act of frustration with his teammates' fecklessness, as much as anything else, remains one of his most watched feats, because the BBC cameraman in Swansea kept his equipment rolling, ignoring instructions from a grandstand producer to close down coverage as an episode of Doctor Who was planned.
The West Indies team were an extension of Caribbean culture, where you live life to the limit and self-expression and music were such a central part of it. I was a huge fan of the West Indies team of the late 70s and early 80s, where Viv Richards had sort of accepted a baton from Sobers and hit balls all over with a sort of carefree joie de vivre. Our colleague Philip Quinn is a great cricket man, and he was telling a story the other day about Sobers, which I'm not 100% sure it's true, but he was born with six fingers on both hands, apparently, and had a finger removed from each and sort of self removed. Philip was fairly scant on the detail, but he's brilliant on these issues when he talks about them. But that six sixes, I've watched that so many times, and that was just a guy allowing the full reign of his talent free. It was marvellous stuff.
Vincent, before we go, you've got a book coming out?
I do, John. I have a book coming out in September. September 17th is the launch. It's called The Lost Sports Writer. And it's basically me looking back on a career that I don't think is possible anymore today, because the access that we had, like I mentioned in 94, the All-Ireland final and that. But I had the blessing in the 90s of being more or less told by the Independent, go wherever you like, and I took them up on that. So Giller publishing it in September, very exciting, a little bit terrifying, because I've ghostwritten seven books, and when you ghostwrite a book, you draw a line under it once it's published, and nobody needs to talk to you, and rightly so. I'm facing into a very different situation with this one, so very exciting.
Vincent and myself are very, very close friends, and we've travelled the world together. But Vincent, as you can obviously tell by looking at us, is a couple of years older than me. And when I was in college studying journalism, we got the papers every day, and the first thing I looked for was Vincent Hogan. And he, like Con Houlihan, he made me dream and believe in words and believe that you could, given a blank canvas, you could paint pictures that would live with people forever. I introduced myself to Vincent at a Jack Charlton harp lager gig in the Transport Club in Crumlin in November 87. And I sort of went up a little bit starstruck, and he could not have been more decent. He helped me enormously in the early years of my career. And to me, he's the supreme wordsmith of a generation. And I would say to anybody, if you're going to buy a book this autumn, by Vincent.
Greatly look forward to reading it, Vincent, and best of luck with it. And I'm sure we'll talk to you about it again. And this has been the Sunday Paper Review on Off the Ball, brought to you by Apple Green this week. Coffee, food, and friendly faces with you on the journey to Croker today, where Vincent and Roy are going. Vincent Hogan and Roy Kershaw, thank you so much for your wisdom and your insight.
Thanks so much, John.
On the Sunday Paper Review. Off the Ball is on your radio 1 to 7 here on News Talk. We're going to have reports and analysis from Tommy Welch and Tommy Rooney. They're at the hurling final between Limerick and Galway. Taggy Fogarty as well in studio to provide studio analysis. The former Republic of Ireland international Keith Tracy will be here to preview the World Cup final between Spain and Argentina, and we'll have the latest from Birkdale on the final day of golf's Open Championship. We're going to return on your wireless at 1, and we'll chat then.
The Sunday Paper Review on Off the Ball
with Apple Green. Coffee, food, and friendly faces. With you on the journey to Croker today.
This is News Talk. Hurling on Off the Ball
with Apple Green, making every journey a winning one.
This is News Talk.
Football on Off the Ball.
You called them a disgrace earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'll call them a disgrace again. I'm amazed at this idea that like Messi is somehow like the player who's got a lot to answer for. It's all the others have a lot to answer for.
Join in the obsession.